Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
What's good, everybody? You are listening to Beneath the Frozen Sea, the Davy Jones LockerRoom.com podcast. My name is Sky, and today is a day of reckoning with the young and a day of reckoning with the old. In case you didn't know by now, the Kraken are out of the playoffs, and that is why a vast number of call-ups happened within the past 2 weeks or so, started with Logan Morrison and Ryan Winterton, and of course has involved Shane Wright. Who, of course, is going to be the major discussion point, because him falling to Seattle has just created this firestorm of discussion around this player. His track to the NHL, his development track over the last year, the fact that he stared at the Montreal Canadiens bench too long, and the fact that his first goal happened against the Habs. It's all a lot of stuff that's sort of incidental to Shane Wright, but not about Shane Wright himself. So imagine how happy I am that I have nothing but positive things to say about Shane Wright through 6 games. I don't have to talk about his draft stock. I don't have to talk about his development. I can just talk about Shane as a hockey player. And he's been great! He's got 4 points, 3 goals, and an assist in 6 games. Through those 6 games, he has been an absolute possession juggernaut. He has had well over 50% in Corsi 4, Fenwick 4, and expected goals 4 percentage. In fact, he's had well over 60%. That means he is getting a lot of shots off, he's getting a lot of unblocked shots off, and he's getting a lot of shot quality off, and that is not true of the other team while he's on the ice. You can always see him trying to do something while he's out there, and that, I think, is the great strength of his game. He is never passive. He's still an NHL rookie by NHL rookie standards, so by all accounts, he is going to make mistakes, and he will make mistakes. As a playmaker, he tries to make a lot of passes, and they don't always connect. But the fact is, he is trying stuff, and that's major for a team whose offensive ability has been so anemic without him. It's even kind of picked up Matty Beniers' play a little bit, because Wright is so dynamic and he's allowed to control an entirely different line with Bjorki and McCann. He doesn't have to worry about trying to make everything happen. They can share the burden and, as a result, can create a more dynamic, fun-to-watch offense. Kind of like what Matty Beniers did in the inaugural season when he was called up for the first time. That team, that inaugural team, was next to unwatchable. As frustrating as this season has been, it doesn't hold a candle to how inept the Kraken were back in their inaugural season. Except when Matty Beniers took the ice. Him getting called up seemingly changed the team overnight. They were exciting, they were engaged, they were trying to create opportunities for themselves, something that they were not able to do without him. And it sold hope. That's something, if nothing else, that Kraken rookies have been able to do a phenomenal job of. Not a whole lot of people had a strong opinion of Logan Morrison, beyond the fact that he shares a name with a baseball player who happens to have played in Seattle before. He's gone out there, he's gotten his first goal, and he's looked amazing throughout his last few games. And if he keeps at it, he might even be able to get the stink of baseball Logan Morrison off of his own name. Ryan Winterton has had a couple of very strong games. He's kind of cooled off a little bit since, but I think he could very much end the season with his first couple goals. And of course, now we're at looking at Shane Wright, who's just the most recent guy to prove that he's got the chops. It's the same thing with Ryker Evans, who's been a revelation on the defensive side. It's the same thing as Ty Cartier back in Game 5 of the Stanley Cup playoffs against the Colorado Avalanche. It's the same thing as Matty Beniers. The Seattle Kraken live on the hope of their youth. And even as rough as this season has been so far, even as rough as this stretch has been, where they are either able to score or they get shut out, there is signs of life. This is why I dedicate like 10 minutes in the back half of this podcast to prospect stuff. There is hope for this team in the system. There are two players who are going all out right now in Canadian Junior playoffs. They had three players with a 90 plus point season, two of them with a 100 plus point season in Canadian Junior. There is reason to care. There is reason to hope, even though the current team in front of them looks bad and is going through sophomore slumps and shooting regression and just all sorts of bad luck. The future is bright. And I know we keep saying that. And I know how frustrating it is for them to play Dallas and just get pumped, just processed like meat. But then you see guys like Shane Wright and Riker Evans and Ryan Winterton and Logan Morrison. And I don't know how you could look at this and say that the future of this team isn't bright. There's still a ton of work that needs to be done for this team and also for the players who are going to end up being on this team in the future. But there is a road to success, and it starts with these guys. It starts with Shane Wright. It starts with Matty Beniers bouncing back from this bad season. It starts with Riker Evans getting more reps as a top four defenseman. But it can be done, and the Kraken will make it back to the playoffs. They just have to trust these kids. Because right now, these kids look ready. And they will have plenty of opportunity to show that they're ready because the Kraken have one of the longest end-of-season schedules I have seen to date. They wisely chose to have two of the worst teams in the NHL show up for the last two home games, the Coyotes and the Sharks. That's Tuesday and Thursday's games, respectively. And then the rest of the season is on the road, and it's nothing but really tough teams. It's Dallas, who are unbelievable. Then there's the Jets and then Minnesota, including a 10 a.m. start against the Blues. What did the Kraken ever do to you, schedule makers? Either way, it's a good opportunity for all of these young players to really establish themselves against some pretty strong teams, and also the Blues, Coyotes, and Sharks. So if you want to get in on the scoring race there, Ryan, now's a good time to do it. And I think for some of the veterans, this is the last opportunity some of them have to make a pitch to stick around. Because I don't think a lot of these players are going to stay here, given the way this season is shaken out. I figure that Kailer Yamamoto's gone, it was nice to have him, but it's clear he just doesn't have the offensive instincts to really make up for a Daniel Sprong type being gone, and probably Brian Dumoulin, who has picked up his play a little bit, but he's just so old, and his foot speed isn't all that great, and he's still like 37, 38. That's real old in this biz. This is a young man's game now. Especially given where you are in the NHL, the Pacific Division is not a good division to be slow. And if I could give just a general critique of the Kraken defense, it's that their skating speed is often caught lacking. So this is the last chance for a lot of these guys to really prove that they deserve to be here. But given the way that this lineup has been set over the past couple of weeks, I don't think they're gonna get that chance. Either way, audition season continues on Tuesday night against the Coyotes. That will be at Climate Pledge, so go on ahead and see the Shane Wright Show while it's still in town. Because once the season's over, the Shane Wright Show is moving back to the desert. That's a good day's worth of travel. That's a lot of gas burned, unless you have an electric car. Either way, I think it's probably better if you just watch the AHL playoffs from your computer. As for expectations that we can expect for the last few games of the season, I hope that they're just competitive. We already know the schedule. It's not going to be perfect. They have some winnable games on there. I just want to see them look better than they have. I'm tired of seeing a team that talented play passive hockey because they're way more talented than that. They're way more talented than having to play passive hockey and having these offensive zone screw-ups. I just want them to show me that they still know how to do that. And of course, to give the kids as much time as feasibly possible, give them as many reps as you can, give them as many shifts as you can, and see how they do from there.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
They got the Coyotes coming up next. Either way, we'll see how they do on Tuesday. And now that we've gotten the Kraken figured out, it's time to look back a little bit on how we got here. Or rather, how I thought we were going to get here. I have here my original drafts of the season previews that I published back in October. And honestly, I'm pretty okay with how I think I did with most of the Western Conference and some of the East. I did not have the Metropolitan pegged to be this bad. I genuinely cannot believe they were this bad. Anyway, let's start out East and work our way back to the Kraken. In the Atlantic, I had Toronto, Boston, Florida, and Tampa making it because they were all really good, and I didn't see that significantly changing. I thought Boston was going to end up a wildcard team. Shows what I know, they've actually been unbelievable. God, wouldn't it be great to have that kind of luck here in Seattle. Other than that, I thought that the Tampa Bay Lightning would just have too bad of a slow start, and no, they generally find a way to get out of those no matter how bad it is. Florida's appearance in the Stanley Cup Final last year turned out to be a harbinger of things to come, and Toronto's usually pretty good, it's just the playoffs that they have trouble. All the teams that weren't going to make it, on the other hand, that's where I really tripped up. The Detroit Red Wings are currently hovering in at the second wildcard spot, turns out that they are in fact pretty good. I doubted the plan, and I'm getting burned by it. As it turns out, Moritz Seider and Lucas Raymond are in fact just enough to get you into the playoffs. Otherwise, my maybes were the Ottawa Senators and the Buffalo Sabres. That turned out to be a pretty definitive no. I admit I'm a little broken up about that because I thought the Sabres were going to do it. There just is too much that needs to go right for them at this point. I just don't think it's going to happen. And I'm a tremendous hater of Eastern Canadian hockey clubs, so Ottawa and Montreal not making it does not surprise me at all. The Metro. Oh boy. Looking back on this, I don't know how I could have published this in good conscience. I am so sorry for making such obviously incorrect choices. I got the teams that were going to make it right. That I can hang on my hat. I got the Rangers and I got the Carolina Hurricanes. Those are unambiguously the two good teams in the Metropolitan. Everyone else completely screwed it up. I had the Devils at second. And that was just me assuming that Lindy Ruff had learned his lesson. Could not have been more wrong about that one. Oh my god. I was wrong about the Caps, and I was wrong about the Pittsburgh Penguins, who, in my defense, really only decided that they were going to be good within the last 2 months. And the Philadelphia Flyers, when I sat down and said, all right, I'm going to go on ahead and read these back at the end of the season so we can all laugh at how I did, I thought I was going to have to sit here in front of this microphone and apologize to Flyers fans all season long. I couldn't believe how well they were doing. And now, just as they've entered the last couple weeks of the season for them, they are starting to rapidly crash out. There is a chance I could still be right about them, but it is cutting it way closer than it should be. I'm also underrating the way that the Caps and the Penguins played. There are some truly incredible talents single-handedly trying to drag those teams into postseason contention. I think the only one I 100% got right was Columbus, because Columbus is just a tire fire right now, and there's not much that they can do to stop that. Islanders I had as a maybe, and it looks like they're going to make it pretty definitively. Good for them. Still don't believe in what they're selling. Now moving back west, Central Division, I had it mostly right, with the noted exception of the Minnesota Wild. They are not second in division. That team is not very good right now. They're probably not making the playoffs, even though they've got Brock Faber playing his heart out. I really thought they were better than this. Otherwise, Stars, Jets, Colorado Avalanche, all where I thought they would be for the most part. Even if I wasn't a gigantic fan of the Jets, they proved me wrong. The Preds were a genuine surprise. They turned out to be really, really good. I think I was significantly underrating them. I really think I should have put more stock into what they were building out there in Nashville, and specifically the guys that they could call up due to years of strong drafting. Also, I was right, Chicago sucks, and that was just about what we expected. Moving to our home division, the Pacific, I think a lot of my optimism for the Kraken coming out of that playoff series might have colored my perception of the rest of the conference. For example, I had the Vancouver Canucks as a maybe next year. The next year was now. They are unbelievable. And the Knights really kind of struggled, and LA was really good, and I really thought that the Flames were going to get it together. Edmonton, I was more or less on board with. The San Jose Sharks, I was more or less on board with. And yes, I significantly overrated the Kraken. But I think that's sort of the Pacific Division. It was the least solved of all of the divisions last year. And that was true going into this year. They've got all these teams with great talent, and they often have their eccentricities, but then they go to the playoffs and ball out. So yeah, anything could happen. Maybe I thought that the Kraken could try and sneak in just like they did last year due to how mercurial the division is. I think things metastasized a lot harder than it did in years previous. And the Kraken just didn't have it, as we've all seen. We have all seen very clearly. So, yeah, didn't do a great job. That's why they have to play the games, because they need to make people like me look like complete fools once we go on ahead and look back on our season previews. And I think it shows you just how mercurial and chaotic hockey can be. I sure had fun reading these back, because, boy, I learned a lot about myself. And that is, I should leave the gambling to Zayum, because I am bad at it. Moving on to prospect news, the first round of the CHL playoffs has already concluded, and a number of Kraken prospects are on their way to the second round. First and foremost is Jagr Furkus and the Moose Jaw Warriors, who swept the Brandon Wheat Kings. They take on the Swift Current Broncos next. Furkus finished his first round with 2 goals, 5 assists, and 7 points in 4 games. He also had 5 penalty minutes for added alliteration. Also in the WHL, moving on to the second round, are the Cadens Price and Hamill of the Kelowna Rockets and Everett Silvertips, respectively. Kelowna draws a tough team in the Prince George Cougars, and it is a Pacific Northwest battle as the Portland Winterhawks take on the Everett Silvertips. It'll also be a battle of defensive prospects, as Tyson Jugnauth joined the Winterhawks this year and has been pretty darn good. He has an assist in 4 games. Caden Price has been a points magnet this playoffs. He's got 8 points in 6 games, almost all of them assists. Postseason hockey really seems to agree with this kid. And Caden Hamill has 2 goals and an assist in 5 games. It's really good to see these defensive prospects showing so much offensive promise, especially if they could end up entering the Dave Hakstol system, where so much of the offense starts up somewhere up at the point. Out east, Andre Loshko has also made it to the second round with Ruin Noranda. They take on the Victoriaville Tigres, not the Tigers, it's different because it's French, Canadian, and Loshko has 3 points in 5 games, pretty good start for him. It's in the OHL where things get a little squirrely. Not necessarily for David Goyette and the Sudbury Wolves. They finished up their series nice and tidy with a 4-1 lead, and they wait on the second round. Goyette has 9 points in 5 games. Tidy bit of work for him. Also waiting on a second round opponent is Ty Nelson, who has 5 points in 5 games with the North Bay Battalion. No, everyone's waiting on the Kitchener Rangers and Erie Otters series, of which the Kraken have 2 players on the Kitchener Rangers, Eddie Chalet and Carson Rakoff. Chalet and Rakoff have 6 points in 5 games, so it can't be them. They seem to know what the assignment is. It's all the other Rangers who need to figure out what they're doing here. They have a game 6 and 7 set for Tuesday and Wednesday, so we'll see how that shakes out. And we've got one last prospect I wanted to highlight. It's Oscar Fisker Mulgaard, who plays for HV71 in the SHL. HV71 didn't do so hot this year, and the SHL has relegation, which means that HV71 and IK Oskarshamn had to fight for their lives to stay in the Swedish Hockey League. The series went 7 games, and HV71 lives to fight another year, and Oscar Fisker Mulgaard assisted on 3 goals during that time. Not too shabby for one of the youngest players on that team. He also finished the year with 21 points in 50 games. Once again, even if the present is pretty dark, the future is always bright. As for Coachella Valley, there really isn't a whole lot of news to discuss. They're so far ahead of the pack in the AHL Pacific Division that they will actually get a first round bye, and even with the Kraken calling up all sorts of players from them, they have comfortably handled their foes. Like tonight, they finished up a game against the Abbotsford Canucks that was 7-2, the final score. The Firebirds just killed them. Their season actually runs a little later than the Kraken's, so we will try to keep an eye on that as time goes on. Good luck to the Firebirds, and good luck to all Kraken prospects currently in the playoffs. And finally, to round things out for the Kraken side of things, it's time to talk about the draft position. The Kraken calling up Shane Wright and company actually made things slightly better for them, obviously playing Anaheim and San Jose in rapid succession gave the Kraken some opportunity to jump up a little bit in the standings, and the rest of the Eastern Conference just seems absolutely determined to knock them out of the top 10. Tankathon currently has the Kraken sitting at 11th overall. They're going to have to do some hardcore losing in order to get back into the swing of things, because Calgary's had the bottom fall out of them, Philly's had the bottom fall out of them, Buffalo and New Jersey continue to be extremely inconsistent, and try as they might, they are way better than teams like Ottawa, Arizona, San Jose, Columbus, and Chicago. This does put them in prime Cole Iserman territory, so otherwise I am perfectly okay with that, but if you want some of the truly high-end talent, you're gonna have to get used to some truly gruesome results. And I just don't want to go through that. I've had enough of gruesome results. Anyway, we will update you when the Kraken finish the season. And you know what? From here, I think I will call it an episode. I need to help set things up for an eclipse that is going to be happening today across the United States. And I need some sleep! So, if you like this episode, you can go on ahead and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts is a personal favorite of mine, and Spotify et al. And if you really liked it, why don't you go on ahead and check out our written content over at DavyJonesLockerRoom.com. We have the best written analysis, recaps, and previews of every Kraken game, including a game thread for every Kraken game so that you can hang out and chill with Kraken fans. It's a lot of fun in those game threads. And you can find us on most major social medias, including the Fediverse, at DavyJonesLR on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Threads, and you can find us on Facebook at DavyJonesLockerRoom. Probably going to be a post-mortem on the season come next week, so get ready for that. It's going to be a real fun episode. I promise to keep it around the same length that it usually is. For Beneath the Frozen Sea, my name is Sky. Thank you very much for listening. Keep calm and post Zoidberg when we win. And as always, go Kraken!